From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM. And boy, do we got a program for you tonight and later tonight. Magic, mysticism, evil. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Well, if you had a chance to watch the Republican debates tonight, for those that were invited, you got a pretty good perspective of what we're going to deal with here. Donald Trump was the unrivaled lightning rod at tonight's Republican presidential debate, but the primetime showdown made clear he's not the only fighter on the stage or in the race. No, no. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie reclaimed his reputation as a tough-talking executive, blasting his rivals for their positions on domestic surveillance and entitlements. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul traded barbs with several candidates, including Christie, and retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, among others, also scored their moments. Meanwhile, one-time frontrunner Governor Jeb Bush, former Governor Jeb Bush, found himself on defense several times and largely avoided tangling with Trump. Perhaps the most fiery moment, though, came in an exchange between Christie and Paul midway through. Long simmering tension between the two exploded when Christie stood by his criticism of the senator for opposing NSA bulk collection of American phone data. Now, we've got a couple experts who watch these debates tonight. One is Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. And John, very quickly, give me your synopsis. Give me your overview first.
First, I thought a very entertaining debate. I think that Trump probably didn't hurt himself. I don't think he helped himself too much. I think it's a kind of an awkward format for him. On the other hand, I think Bush looked way too robotic, awkward, and he looked like he was reciting memorized talking points. I thought Scott Walker looked like he was a lot weaker of a candidate than he appeared. I think the real winners in this debate are Chris Christie, who I think kind of resuscitates him mm-hmm. from the dead. I think, because of the scandal in New Jersey, everybody counting him out, it really shows how spontaneous he can be with that exchange with Rand Paul. And I think Huckabee really leaped ahead in this because I think there's a kind of an amusing quality to him. And frankly, I think, Kasich didn't do too badly either. But I think the real winners are Huckabee, and I think Christie, and I think Trump did not lose ground and did not commit any major gaffes.
John, the interesting thing about Trump is he said at this point he would not support any other Republican candidate if they got the nomination, and he kind of hinted that he's not ruling out an independent run if he doesn't get the GOP nod. I have a question here for you. Could it be, because he was once very close with Hillary Clinton, could it be that this is a setup? Because if Donald Trump runs as an independent, Hillary Clinton gets that election.
Well, I know the Republican Party and, a lot of the kind of spinning that's going on has Hillary sort of counted out now because of the email scandal and, the Benghazi event that they're still...
Don't count her out yet.
She's a very, very strong candidate. I don't think that Trump is there for that. I think he's in it for the long haul. I believe that he's a straight shooter, and I think there's something very spontaneous and refreshing about him. As he said, he's not scripted, and he's, politically incorrect. And I think that Fox News, Megyn Kelly and Chris Wallace, I think they really went after him like no other candidate there with that cheap shot, a low blow about his bank, a few of his bankruptcies, as a businessman, and the shot about his comments about women. So I think they really went after him, and I think that was pretty carefully scripted.
Track John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Now, the guy that you would sit next to at a bar and share a beer with or a glass of wine, of course, I'd get my own glass of wine. Howard Bloom can have his own. Can't you, Howard? Howard, what'd you think of tonight's debate?
Well, there were some remarkable things that the press is never going to tell you about. John Kasich said at one point, first of all, John Kasich came from utter oblivion and turned himself into a credible candidate.
He looked good tonight.
Yes, he looked very, very good. But the remarkable thing was when he said, people are fed up. Donald Trump is speaking for them. It is a mistake to tune him out. And then there was a conversation you probably won't read about between Mike Huckabee and Donald Trump that was absolutely remarkable. Huckabee said, "We have a Wall Street to Washington axis of power that has controlled the political climate. The donor class feeds the political class, who does the dance that the donor class wants." And here's what Trump said. He said about the contributions that he gave to the Clintons and to nearly every candidate on stage tonight. He's donated almost all of them. He said, "When they call, I give. If you give, they do whatever the hell you need them to do. When I need something from them 2 or 3 years later, I call them. They are there for me." It means the government is not a government that represents you and me. It's a government that represents the big guys who can slosh a lot of money into their pockets. There were other things that came up. Huckabee made a very telling point. He said the problem with Social Security and Medicare today is that their funding comes from wages, but most of the income in this country is not from wages. It's made by people at the top who get dividends and capital gains. That's that problem of radical imbalance between the super rich, the top 1%, and the rest of us, and it's coming to roost in entitlement programs. There were lots of other interesting statements. Marco Rubio, the only two who had strong visions of the future were Carly Fiorina and Marco Rubio. And Marco Rubio said, if this election is a resume competition, Hillary Clinton will be the next president. This election better be about the future, not the past. And then he cited a fact that no one I know of has ever paid attention to. He said the biggest retailer in the world right now is, and you would fill in automatically, Walmart.
Can't do it.
That's not what he said. He said Amazon, a company that doesn't even have a single store. The world is changing.
You got that right. Howard, thank you so much. Look, and the world is changing, and we're going to keep our eyes on this. This is going to get fun, folks, as we lead up to the election in 2016. All kinds of things are going to be happening. And I want to pledge this to you. We will not endorse, we're not going to support any candidate. You will get from me unbiased, fair treatment, and we'll call it the way we see it. I want you to make up your own minds. And though this is a program that's going to continue to deal with the unusual, the supernatural, the science, the conspiracies, we're going to keep our eyes on what's going on here because it affects you. And make no mistake about it. Whoever gets elected will be the one to decide whether you continue to pay income tax. Whoever gets elected will be the one to help push and decide whether we're going to have another war again. And we're going to watch it. And we're going to get your feedback in the months to come. That you can count on. New York City officials say 10 people have died in the outbreak of Legionnaires' disease centered in the South Bronx, and a total of 100 cases have been diagnosed now. This disease is caused by breathing in mist contaminated by certain bacteria. They think it's going through the air conditioning system. A Malaysian team has collected other plane debris now, including a window and some aluminum foil on that Reunion Island near where a flapperon, part of the wing, was found last week. But they're not sure if it belonged to the missing MH370 flight, which they do believe that wing part came from. 239 people aboard that plane when it went down March 8, 2014. Remains found at the foot of Switzerland's Matterhorn Glacier have been identified as two Japanese climbers who disappeared 45 years ago. DNA tests showed the bones belonged to the men who went missing on the mountain in August of 1970. My gosh. Earth, by the way, entering a stream of debris from Comet Swift-Tuttle, source of the annual Perseid meteor shower. It's time to check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. This is going to be an exciting one, huh, Stephen?
Oh, George, high above the debates and way out in space, things are really heating up with this annual Perseid meteor shower, as we reported last weekend. Always great things to see. There'll be no moon in the sky this year. The peak night is next Wednesday night into Thursday morning. But here's some interesting information, George, coming into us from observers all over the world. Look into the northeast sky even now if your skies are clear. We're seeing, George, an unprecedented number of these bright fireballs ahead of what hopefully will be a bigger peak later coming up as we move into the 12th of August. But this is a great shower. We'd like all of our listeners in Phoenix and Arizona and all across the nation to check drsky.com. As you know, we have a big event called Meteor Madness, but no matter where you're looking at this, George, interesting. But in closing, Another cool object for people to see is the so-called secret little spy satellite or craft like a mini shuttle called the X-37B. And this one, officially known as Orbital Test Vehicle 4, I saw it the other night. How you can see it is go to a website, which we, of course, link to on drsky.com, called heavensabove.com. Just type in OTV4. What's amazing about this, George, is that this little object is using what we think, not official now, some sort of new propulsion technology called the Hall effect. It's like an ionization engine, and it may even skirt the upper atmosphere of the Earth to suck in atmospheric, you know, oxygen and particles to help the propellant tanks so this vehicle can stay doing its so-called secret observations of the Earth and other military applications for a long time to come. So exciting things coming.
You got it. Thank you so much, Stephen. Hey, so there's a guy who lives in an old missile silo. That's right. And he happens to run the largest UFO reporting center in the world. It's none other than Peter Davenport. You are still in that silo, aren't you, Peter?
Well, I don't live there, but you're right. I own it, George.
I bet
you're
in there.
There's a lot of work to be done there.
It sure is.
I'll tell you, there are a lot of, from my vantage point, there's some very, very strange things that are taking place on this planet. And I'm not talking about debates or meteor showers. This has been a very interesting week. Going back to this past Sunday, August 2nd, a sole observer down in Reno, Nevada, saw an object streaking over the sky, saw it for just 2 or 3 seconds. Ordinarily, I'd question it and assume that it might have been a meteor, but she says that it had a strobing red light on its ventral surface and two green lights behind it, saw two objects. I mention it, that occurred at 0110 hours, 110 a.m. 20 minutes later, two women were in a hotel also in Reno. This is about 1:30 a.m., 20 minutes later again, they felt their whole room starting to vibrate. They feared that they were in the middle of an earthquake, and they heard a deafening sound pass over their hotel room. Very, very interesting report. When it got over their hotel room, it illuminated, had a very bright light, illuminated the entire hotel that they were in. Very interesting report. Briefly, the next night, Monday night, Phillipsburg, New Jersey, a couple driving home after dinner, they saw three lights hovering over a cemetery. They slowed their car and suddenly realized it was yet another of these triangular craft. It rose up, passed right over their head. It had a roaring sound to it. They said it was really very unsettling to them. They got out of there quickly. Last night, Weddington, North Carolina, that's just south of Matthews in Charlotte, North Carolina, just north of the South Carolina line. Two people were out driving. They saw a dark triangle hovering over an empty field. It suddenly rose up. They could see three red lights on its ventral surface, one in each of the corners. Last two reports briefly, George. These are very, very interesting. Last night in Palmyra, Pennsylvania, which is just east of Harrisburg, woman saw 10 yellow lights hovering over an empty field. I mention that report because tonight, just 4.5 hours ago, a couple was sitting in a restaurant in Hershey, Pennsylvania, the Circle Restaurant, which is quite well known. And they saw suddenly four yellow lights form in the night sky.
My.
A few minutes later, three military fighter jets circled those four yellow lights. Yellow lights went out. The planes kept circling. And five minutes later, they headed away and were gone.
Wow.
Lots going on. And all but the Hershey report are posted to our website.
And you can go to his website, which is UFOCenter.com. And by the way, Peter funds all of this himself. I tell you, I'm going to do a little fundraiser for him one day. I know he doesn't want me to do that, but I'm going to. But if you can just help him out a little bit, that's all I'll say. Go to his website, UFOCenter.com. Of course, if everybody sent him a dollar, he could keep that place running for a long, long time. A Harvard study tracked people who ate spicy foods at least 3 to 5 times a week and said they will live longer than people who don't. That's amazing. Why? Because spicy foods fight cancer and other diseases with potent antioxidants. Just remember that. And a story that we had a few days ago, a powerful new technique for generating supercharged genetically modified organisms, GMOs, that can spread rapidly in the wild, has caused alarm among scientists who fear that it may be misused accidentally or deliberately and cause a health emergency or environmental disaster. Up next, Jeffrey Smith, his book, Genetic Roulette, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. This will be a short segment, but we've got Jeffrey Smith for about an hour and a half here as we talk about GMOs and this incredible story that scientists are concerned about it getting loose in the wild or that it could be used for terrorism. Jeffrey Smith is the executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology. He is an author, Seeds of Deception, Genetic Roulette, his DVD, Genetic Roulette, as well, The Gamble of Our Lives. Jeffrey, this, when I saw this story, it scared the living daylights out of me.
Well, you know, George, there may be new techniques that can spread rapidly, but that there's been old techniques that have been spreading rapidly for years, and it's just putting it into a perspective what we're seeing. And if you think about it, it's unrecallable. It's completely irreversible, the self-propagating genetic pollution. And if you contrast that with what Monsanto's consultant revealed in 1999, that it was Monsanto's plan to genetically engineer 100% of all commercial seeds in the world and patent them, and Anderson created the plan to achieve it, and now that's expanded to include insects and trees and algae and bacteria, etc. They're planning to replace nature, so it really is an absolute terrifying concept to eliminate the products of the billions of years of evolution and replace it with organisms designed by Monsanto and others. So I think your reaction is quite appropriate.
And once that happens, Jeffrey, once that genetically modified spread takes over, we'll never get the natural seeds back again, would we?
Well, what happens is the gene pool as a whole is contaminated. It doesn't mean that every single corn seed that's out there is genetically modified, but the vast majority is. Now, if we were to stop producing GMO seeds, we would see a dramatic reduction in the percentage. So, for example, there was a genetically modified corn variety called Starling. It was planted to less than 1% of the acreage in the United States back in 2000. And it was discovered in 22% of the samples tested by the USDA. Now, there was a billion-dollar recall because it wasn't allowed in food. There was all sorts of efforts to stop it. It's still in our food supply. 3 years later, it was found in 1.9% of the samples. So it's going to be reduced in its exposure if we continue to pour in new seeds. But some of these things actually, some of the genetically engineered crops outcross more readily. There was a study, there was a theory that the biotech industry proposed saying, oh, don't worry, if released into the wild, GMOs would simply be out-selected by natural stuff. Well, that turns out to be the opposite.
Oh,
of the
boy.
Case. In some plants.
What would happen and how would terrorists use GMOs?
There's so many different ways. I mean, if you just look, for example, already you have the tobacco industry created what was called Tobacco Loco, highly addictive tobacco grown secretly and illegally in Brazil, smuggled it into the United States to create increased addictive behavior. Now you can create addictive behavior. You can, if you figure out how to use certain genes and proteins, you could theoretically change mood, behavior, disease rates. In fact, you can create crops that, if you spray certain chemicals on them, then only then they will be able to reproduce, or they'll change in what they reproduce. Maybe they'll then become toxic. So you could have Trojan horses in crops, etc. And if we're not even talking about the release of genetically modified vaccine or viruses and bacteria. So there's all sorts of things that are, you know, you could basically go as wild as your imagination in terms of what can be used deviously from genetically engineered organisms.
Jeffrey, when we come back in just a moment, I want to talk with you about the bill, H.R. 1599. The House of Representatives, they've passed it, which basically says, hey, you know what? You don't have to label anymore. You don't have to. You're not going to be compelled to label your foods as GMOs. But what's the Senate going to do? We'll find out next. And we're going to take your calls next hour with Jeffrey Smith as we talk about GMOs. Love to hear stories about what things are like when you go into the grocery store and how you check around for things. We've got so much to talk with him about. You are listening worldwide to Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie with you, Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey, when you put together the group, the Institute for Responsible Technology, you became a leading spokesperson about GMOs. What did you see? What was it that got you into this?
Well, it's interesting. I went to a lecture by a genetic engineer the same year that they were about to plant GMOs widely in 1996. And he was describing how the technology was completely unready for prime time, that its most common result was surprise side effects, that we had no idea how to speak the language of the DNA predictably, and yet without any required safety studies, everyone who eats would be exposed to these dangerous genetically modified foods, and once they were released into the environment, they would spread forever. And I realized the magnitude of the problem, and I also realized that this scientific lecture was going to kind of fall on deaf ears and wasn't going to get out of the room. My background is as an educator, communicator, and I have an MBA, and I've been consulting in strategy and all that. So I realized we needed a strategic approach to communication, and I needed to understand the technology in order to translate the science into English. So I started interviewing him and others back in 1996, and I haven't stopped. So I've been interviewing scientists all over the world and come up with books and movies. In fact, right now, the last movie I did was Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, and that has had so many people switching to non-GMO diets. It was played over 300 times on PBS. It was seen millions of times online. I've been besieged by testimonies from individuals who say that they're getting better from eating non-GMO foods and organic, and they talk about the switches. In fact, I have a preliminary results of a survey we just did with several thousand people, which I'd be happy to share for the first time.
Yeah, please. Please.
So in the survey, I've been seeing in about 125 lectures of individuals and doctors. I ask, okay, tell me what specific symptoms you've improved from when you switched to non-GMO. And the overwhelming number one category has always been digestive. So in our survey, it was, we have 1,500 responses so far. We expect to be several times that. We have digestive disorders is the number one by far for all the things. Then I also said the number two is always increased energy or reduced brain fog. And that, in fact, was the number two. Low energy was the number two. Brain fog was soon after. And then I described, and I was incredibly predictable. I would even say to the audience, I know the categories that are going to be coming up and how common they are. Then I said there's a middle section of food allergies and weight problems and mood issues like depression or anxiety, joint pain, and then memory, etc. And all of them came up in the survey just as we predicted. So this has happened over and over again at over 125 lectures, including lectures to medical, to doctors and nutritionists who've been prescribing non-GMO diets to thousands of patients. And so what's happened is we started to videotape testimonials, and I heard from one person the best testimonial I have ever heard, because it was their whole family, 21 chronic conditions between five people, all went away when they switched to organic food. She became an expert in nutrition, what happened to her son, who was autistic, is amazing. What happened to her, she was permanently disabled, was amazing. So we decided to do a new film that we're in production right now called Secret Ingredients. And people can go to secretingredientsmovie.com. If they'd like to make a contribution, we're doing crowdfunding so that we can finish the production of it. They can read more about it, and we'll also let people know when it gets out. But right now, we have such overwhelming evidence. And we're not only, I was interviewing this one family, you know, extensively, and then I was touring with Neil Young for 2 weeks last month, who has an album out called The Monsanto Years. And I was introduced to a fella whose kids had the parallel issues that this family had, and they also went away. Also an autistic diagnosis, also asthma, etc. And so we're seeing the same type of thing over and over again, and I'm very excited to bring it out in real-life situations, backed up by doctors, backed up by scientists.
Jeffrey, tell us a little bit about what's going on with H.R. 1599. The House has passed it. What else is happening?
Well, it was basically a purchased bill by the biotech industry and Big Food. They spent over $50 million in the first half of the year lobbying, and much of that went to this dark act. And it was passed 275-150, resounding pass, 45 Democrats voting for the bill, most of the Republicans other than 12. And what it says is that there's no mandatory labeling that can happen. The FDA cannot require mandatory labeling of GMOs. Even though 90% of Americans or more want it, this will make that impossible. Instead, it codifies their so-called voluntary labeling, which has been a failure for 14 years. No company has ever labeled its product voluntarily contains GMOs. It also eliminates local jurisdiction over GMOs, and this could eliminate over 130 existing statutes, regulations, and ordinances in 43 states at the state and municipal level, including GM-free zones. Now, I was speaking to a county commissioner today talking about the benefits economically of creating a GM-free zone to protect losses in their agriculture. This, if passed by the Senate, could eliminate their ability to protect their farmers from contamination, which could wipe out their markets, foreign markets, as well as in some cases domestic markets. So it's an absolute disaster. It was when you looked at the statements by the congressmen that were in favor of it, it was clear that they had just drank the poison, drank the Kool-Aid, and were just repeating the lies that had been told to them by the biotech industry. So it was very disappointing, but also predictable, because the biotech industry spent $50 million with Big Food to create this to happen. So now it goes to the Senate. Now we have a lot more strength than the Senate. It could be a separate bill, or it could be constructed as a rider and inserted into a must-pass bill, which is a problem. So we're inviting people to go to responsibletechnology.org, sign up for our newsletter, and we'll let people know in September, which it'll probably be, what they can do to protect our right for mandatory labeling. And also, this bill makes it illegal for states or anyone to say that natural is a problem with GMOs. So there was some state, Vermont, made it illegal for companies to put natural on their product if it contained GMOs, and GMOs by definition are not natural. This would eliminate that as well.
When people eat GMO foods, do they get sick right away? Does it happen later? Do you have to build up something? What happens?
Well, you know, let me take the reverse first, because I have more experience with people getting off of GMOs and how fast they get better. The first time I heard actual timelines was from a doctor in Chicago who by that time had prescribed non-GMO diets to 5,000 patients. And she said, for mood and behavior, the results are immediate. For allergies and asthma, 3 to 7 days. For digestive disorders, up to 2 months and sometimes over 2 years. Now, I've asked people about their speed of recovery. There was a woman who had a 6.5-year-old son who she said was violent and out of control. She stood up in an MIT audience when I was giving a lecture with a faculty member there. She said they wanted to kick her son out of school and label him retarded. She saw the film Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, changed his diet immediately, and she said the problems went away. And I said, okay, how long did it take? And she paused and said, about a week. She paused a little longer and said, within a month, I had a new son. Now, in interviewing a pediatrician for this film, I asked her, what do parents generally say when you change their diet? And she said, very, very often, they say, I don't recognize my kid. I have a new child. It happens over and over again. Now, the mood and behavior thing among children can happen very, very quickly. Now, for those that get off of GMOs and they're clean, sometimes the kids will be exposed to GMOs and there'll be an immediate reversion. So a grandmother was telling me, she had volunteered at a booth where I was speaking at a conference, and she said that after watching Genetic Roulette, she said to her son and daughter, because she was concerned about her grandkids, if there's anything you do in this life for me because I ask, it's watch this film, which I thought was very flattering. Huh. And the son watched the film and said, okay, I'm going to change his son's diet. Now, his son had breathing problems and also was wild and out of control at school. So when they changed the diet, the breathing problems disappeared completely, and they no longer received phone calls from the school causing, you know, about the behavior, except the day after the grandson ate at the other grandparent's house because they fed them the other food. And this I hear all the time. So with some things, people react allergically, or sometimes they have skin conditions, a lot of times mood and behavior, sometimes gut problems. I was interviewing someone for the film, and they said when they go out to eat and they eat a GMO, they have what they call GMO belly because they notice immediately pain in the stomach. Now, it's not common for the average person to be that sensitive. Likewise, one of the practitioners said if she puts some kids on a non-GMO diet, an organic diet, about 20% get better with nothing else done. Now, sometimes it's a higher percentage for some practitioners. People respond to it differently. And there's different components of GMOs. There's the Roundup, which is sprayed on most GMOs, 80% of it. And that can affect neurotransmitters and vitamin D and liver detoxification and gut bacteria. It's an antibiotic and hormone imbalance, etc. Then there's the...
Didn't a city in California just ban Roundup?
Yes, Richmond, California. And I was working with the cardiologist that got that passed, and there's now actually a movement to ban Roundup around the world. It was sped up. It was already happening since 2003, but in March of this year, the World Health Organization declared it a probable human carcinogen, the active ingredient called glyphosate. And immediately Sri Lanka banned it, and Bermuda banned it, and Colombia no longer sprays it for eradicating coca plantations. It was banned for non-commercial use in France. That'll probably follow in other European countries. It had already been banned in Denmark. And there's so many things that are wrong with Roundup. It was banned. It also promotes birth defects and cancer to such a high level that 30,000 doctors in Argentina who've seen a 400% increase in birth defects region-wide, a 300% increase in cancer region-wide, they're demanding a banning of Roundup in that country, which is filled with Roundup-ready soy. So it would wipe out the current agriculture in Argentina, but it's wiping out the population as it stands now.
Aren't these scientists concerned that things that would kill weeds and kill insects could also harm human beings?
You know, there was a lot of disinformation put out by Monsanto, and I'll give you one very specific thing that some of your more technical listeners will appreciate. They said, glyphosate only, or Roundup only, blocks one particular metabolic pathway. It's called the shikimate pathway. And because humans don't have that pathway, it's completely safe. Well, Monsanto's being sued in a class action lawsuit because we do have a shikimate pathway, not in our bodies, but in the gut bacteria that produce the precursors to serotonin and dopamine and melatonin. In other words, vital neurotransmitters rely on that pathway, which is shut down by Roundup in our food. It shuts it off in the gut production, which is where most of it is produced. So when you think about serotonin, it's the mood neurotransmitter. It's also related to regulating blood sugar and telling us that we've eaten enough and we're full. If that ends up deficient, we can have immediate mood problems, immediate problems with eating, and problems with blood sugar. And those are some of the things that are correlated with the rise in the use of Roundup in the United States. Also, melatonin, which is related to insomnia, dopamine, which is related to Parkinson's. All of these things may be directly affected in their quantity by consuming Roundup-ready crops or anything sprayed with Roundup.
Jeffrey, officials in St. Louis, where Monsanto is based, are scared to death the company may move. What are you hearing?
Well, they put in a bid to buy Syngenta for $45 billion. And you see, Monsanto's entire fortunes are based on Roundup. The majority of their profits are Roundup spray, and then the bulk of their GMO seeds are Roundup ready. Now, Roundup is failing in the field. You have Roundup-resistant weeds on more than 70 million acres. It's been declared a probable human carcinogen. Their BT-producing crops that produces the insecticide, those are failing to kill root cornworm, you know, the corn rootworm, and also the cotton weevil. So we have a situation where their technology is failing, and they're desperate to get more chemicals to work with. And so they are backed into a corner. They said they're going to want to buy Syngenta. Syngenta refused. They may do a hostile takeover. Their second choice is Bayer Crop Science, which also has chemicals. And they even wrote a letter to Syngenta saying that they would be interested in changing their name and moving to the UK. So they're really desperate right now. They're backed against the wall, and you can't tell by looking at the media, but if you know the inside story, they're pulling out all their favors. They've gotten major articles written in the New York Times and Newsweek and a lot of different magazines.
Pretty favorable, too.
Very favorable, because it's all disinformation. So if you look at some of our responses and others, you realize that point by point, these reporters have been duped. They're either the liars or the lied to, but they've been duped by misinformation and presenting absolute false talking points that we've been striking down for two decades.
How far can GMO seeds, call it whatever you want, the pollinization portion of it, travel?
I was told by Dr. Elaine Ingham that she was told privately by someone at the EPA of an experiment that they did on bacteria. And they had genetically engineered bacteria with a marker so that they can test to see which of the bacteria was genetically engineered. Then they released it and monitored it in monitoring sites all around. I think it was a mile away or something. They found it in all of those sites, but what was astounding is that same genetically engineered bacteria is now found everywhere in the world. Now, Elaine Ingham was very concerned about this type of thing because she was able to stop the deployment of a genetically modified bacteria that was designed to turn cellulose or plant material into alcohol. They were going to do that and then take the residues of that, which they considered to be pure benign fertilizer, and spread it around North America. Well, it turns out that fertilizer had live bacteria in it, and when she insisted that they do an experiment, spread that fertilizer in a proper field and test it, it turned the roots of wheat into alcohol and killed the plants in a few days. And she stopped what was to be a major deployment of this fertilizer around the United States, where it would have spread, just like the EPA experiment where the bacteria would have gone everywhere. This, she says, that according to her evaluation, this could have rendered North American agriculture sterile. So this was a near miss. And there was another near miss around the same time. This was the early days of GMOs, where they sprayed something called Ice Minus on strawberries in order to change the structure of bacteria that's normally there so that it wouldn't attract the water to create frost and it would protect the strawberries. Well, it turns out that same bacteria is used in the atmosphere to gather and to condense water so that it creates rain. And the change that they were going to do, if it became dominant in the atmosphere, would have altered the weather patterns on Earth potentially forever.
Jeez.
The kind of things that we're talking about.
Maybe it's happening. When we come back, let's get an update on the bees and your phone calls with Jeffrey Smith on Coast to Coast AM.